Hello and welcome to the BBC Inside Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Wendy Austin. We're doing business in a socially responsible way on the programme today. More on that after the headlines. 50 million investment at Randox for developing new medical testing products, with almost half of the money coming from InvestNI, one of its biggest ever grants. More job losses as four Lagan companies go into administration, and tyre sensor manufacturer Schrader Electronics cuts 125 posts in Carrick. Hagen Homes says it'll accept bitcoins as payment for houses, and Ulster Supported Employment signs a dream deal for recycling mattresses. It's a social enterprise, and that's what we're talking about on Inside Business today. So what is a social enterprise? Is it allowed to make profits, to keep profits? What does the business do for the community within which it's based? Could your company do business with one or become one? Lots of questions there. Hopefully plenty of answers and lots to talk about on the programme today with Bill Atkinson, who's Chief Executive USEL, which is Ulster Supported Employment and Learning. John McMullen, CEO Bryson Group. Maeve Monaghan's the CEO of the Now Group. And Jenny Ebbage is a partner specialising in charity law at Edwards & Company Solicitors. Maeve, what exactly is a social enterprise? I mean, how does the Now Group operate?
Well, I suppose the Now Group supports people with learning difficulties and autism into jobs, but we're also interested in making money. And I think that's the thing to get out of the way right away. Yes, social enterprises can make a profit. It's just what we do with it that is different. It is not for shareholders' benefit. It's for the benefit of the organisation and its participants and its beneficiaries. So we invest the money back into making an impact for the participants and the people that we serve. So I think there can be a little bit of misconception about that, but it's not a not-for-profit. It's for a profit. But it's just what's done with the profit that's slightly different.
John, you're the CEO of Northern Ireland's largest social enterprise. Tell us how Bryson operates.
Bryson was formed in 1906 by the business community in Belfast and the churches, and its role was to address poverty. The modern Bryson's now a group of charitable companies and trading companies, and it's using a business model to make a real difference to people's life. I think the term is profit with purpose. Mm-hmm. We're all aimed towards making a profit, but we use that profit in different ways, either to reinvest in new pieces of work that we're all interested in, or to support those the vulnerable people that we work with.
It's a very different model to what we would have seen before, isn't it?
Yes. Our journey is probably over the last 17 years when we moved from a typical charity that ran projects to saying, if these are things that are important, do fuel poverty would be a good example. Fuel poverty is very large in Northern Ireland, but 42-43%. If you really want to make a difference, you have to function at scale. So finding ways to scale up our activities to make a difference was the challenge. We adopted a business model, thought that we can find contract areas where we can compete, and we compete in open market for those services, but deliver them better and deliver them differently. A good example would that be when we're dealing with government. Their main programme said you can't really support people to find cheaper routes to energy, and we said that's really straightforward. So we developed 27 oil clubs with about 5,000 members, and we're now probably have ordered 5.5 million litres, selling them, getting people to be able to buy them at a discount. That's how you intervene. That's what a social enterprise does.
It's very interesting, I must say. Jenny, legally, are social enterprises different?
Well, social enterprise is not a legal structure as such, in the same way as charity isn't a legal structure. They're really descriptors of the status of organisations. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about what a social enterprise actually means and does. So we would have, for example, a number of charities that would also be classed as social enterprises. But there's a number of bodies that are not charitable but are social enterprise not-for-profit entities. I think one of the main differences is if it has a charity wrapper around it, there's more restrictions in relation to what type of trading or commercial activity it can do, because charities can only trade to further their primary purposes. So if a charity is looking at an opportunity to do more work through commercial trade or providing goods or services, they'll often set up a trading subsidiary. And that is actually the safest and best model to deliver that. And often then the profits from the social enterprise or indeed a pure trading company then get covenanted or gifted back up to the charity for its purposes.
Interesting. We'll pursue that all a bit more in a moment. Bill, I've kept the Green Apple World Environmental Award winner to last. Good for you. Tell us about Ulster Supported Employment, USEL, and what you do, and also about this Dream Mattress contract.
Well, I guess we're the largest provider of disability employment support in Northern Ireland. And quite simply, we do that in a number of different ways. We work at the minute with somewhere between 700 and 800 employers across the whole of Northern Ireland currently. They actually place people with disabilities or health conditions into work. And the second way in which we do that, we would create new employment opportunities ourselves through a social enterprise model. So we really operate for business functions under the UCL umbrella. So we make new beds and mattresses. We also make customised covers, carriers, predominantly for the emergency services sector, although we are working with one of the new emerging social enterprises in Northern Ireland, which is Modlog. And that historically would have been work that Modlog would have got actually made in China, and we have now repatriated that work. So all of that work's now made in Belfast. We've also a small, high-end brand of vintage satchel. So we're the longest established maker of handmade leather bags in Northern Ireland, in the UK. And the fastest growing part of our business is a circular economy, which is really around our mattress recycling, our carpet recycling and our furniture reuse.
Let me just take you back for two ticks to Modlog. Tell us, I'm not with you on that.
Modlog are a new social enterprise started. They're based in Portadown, and they have a model where they sell rucksacks, bags, a whole range of sort of carrying goods. And for every bag they sell commercially, they gift a bag for a child coming out of care. We met the guy who started the Modlog is a guy called Dave Linton. So we met Dave Linton roughly about a year ago. And at that point, he was buying all his product in China and bringing it in and basically branding it and moving it through that social enterprise model. And we've been able to work with Dave over the last 12 months to onshore all of that manufacturing. So all of those bags are now made in Belfast.
There are some great stories, I must say. I mean, it's fascinating to hear all of that. And I think most of us just have really no idea of what's going on in all your various companies. We also probably have no idea about Zero Waste Northwest. It's a social enterprise which has also been in the headlines recently. It's to work with Derry City and Strabane District Council in a pioneering economic strategy for Northern Ireland, which aims to get rid of waste entirely and instead to make money and create jobs from the things that we throw away. It's the circular economy, which is very much what Bill just mentioned there. And Jim Keyes of Zero Waste Northwest told me what his social enterprise aims to do.
What we want to achieve is that the Northwest becomes a model for a zero waste circular economy, so that we actually model for the rest of Northern Ireland an approach to local business and resource management that actually leads the way and is future-proof in our economic development.
What is a circular economy? I mean, what do you mean by a circular economy? It's a bit hard to get your head around, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the part of the reason is that it's in contrast to what has been in place and has been destroying the planet in various ways, the take, make and dispose model. Because in that model, you generate waste, which has to be disposed of. And it's generally disposed of out of sight, but not without implications for the environment. So a circular economy is a regenerative system in which the resource input and waste, emissions and energy leakage are minimised. It's about long-lasting design, good maintenance, repair, reuse, remanufacturing, refurbishing. Recycling, in a way, is what you do if you can't remanufacture, if you can't refurbish, if you can't repair. We close the circle, so the very last thing we do, if we can't do anything else with the materials, is we recycle them. For example, if you have a disposable coffee cup, you're having to recycle that if it's been made in a way that's economic to recycle. But quite a lot of them aren't made to be recycled. But better than recycling is to have a cup that you reuse so that you prevent the waste being created in the first place.
How many jobs do you think this will create, and in what areas?
You know me, I did a specific bespoke piece of work for Derry and Strabane District Council. And over 25 years, the projections are that we would save £71 million in costs and we would generate around 190 plus jobs. So it would be about 50 plus jobs in preparation and reuse, 50 plus jobs in recycling collection and 50 plus jobs in subsequent reprocessing of the materials. The cost savings would be around £3 million per annum. And that's mainly because once you have a quality recyclate, you're not paying to get it disposed of. You're actually selling it. And that's where the big cost savings comes.
That's Jim Keyes there from Zero Waste Northwest. It's a whole new way of thinking, really, Maeve Monaghan, isn't it? You know, and not just on your behalf, but this social enterprise, circular economy. It's not something that people are doing for you. It's something that we're all expected to be involved in, really, isn't it?
I think it's looking at a different business model that's looking at opportunities to create jobs and save money. And I think that's one of the things that I've always found so addictive about the social enterprise. And I think once people get involved in it, that's why they love it. It's the ability to link business solutions innovatively. And I think that's one of the real opportunities for social enterprises. You mentioned supply chains earlier. That I just think that the great opportunity comes with us being able to do business with other people and other businesses in other sectors. And I think what Bill and Ucil is doing is fantastic. And Bryson, that idea of a circular economy, that makes good business sense, but it also creates an impact.
And that idea of other businesses doing business with you, has that come about easily, or has that been something that you've had to seduce companies into, if I could put it like that, Bill?
Well, if you look at Ucil as a business, we have the same pressures that anybody who operates in the private sector would have.
Yeah.
We have that continual search for market opportunities. We have the continual pressure on cost, quality, resource. But one of the key things for us is how we locate people that we can work collaboratively with. And I guess it's a case of, for me, we've had an ongoing conversation with both Maeve and John as an example, around how do we work differently? Who else could we work with? How do we come together to almost put some solutions together that maybe local government and how they address things like economic inactivity would be welcome to engage in that discussion, because the social impact that we're all trying to deliver has a massive impact on Northern Ireland as a whole.
And is it the case, John, that, and I just picked up on what Bill said there, how, as he put it, how we locate people that we can do business with, is it the case that that's usually the way around that it is, that you're looking for partners to work with, if you like, or is normal, in inverted commas, business looking now to partner with social enterprise?
I think the initial experience was it was us looking for partners. We would have a lot of experience and programmes like we changed the shape of recycling and collection of materials, realising, just as Jim was saying, is this is a valuable resource. And what you really need to do with it is to treat it in a way that you get the full value out of it. So by collecting materials, they're not contaminated, they're high value, but you get another value. You'll be able to remanufacture locally and putting the materials into local markets. That's the circular nature of the circular economy. We would have sought private sector partners to do that. For instance, Cherry Plastics are at Portadown, I think. We would supply about 7,700 tonnes per annum. That's about, we're probably in Northern Ireland supplying 43% of their requirement. Why aren't we supplying 100%? Those are business opportunities. We would have sought that. Now we're looking at a change. I think we're all experiencing it, but we need something to change fundamentally. Yeah. We need legislation in place which creates a requirement for procurement to measure and value social impact. And then the inverse happens. This facility of a Social Value Act that Social Enterprise NI have been a main driver for exists in every other region of the United Kingdom, but not here. And in that context, then those who are tendering who want to identify how they can improve their social value create mixed supply chains. Mixed supply chains are part of the future of a more plural, rebalanced Northern Ireland economy, I think.
We had Nora Smith from CO3 on the programme a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about the Social Value Act as well, and, mm-hmm. and the lack of it, and yes. the fact that, you know, it was a case of so near and yet so far. I mean, can you see it happening now? I mean, you know, there's still no one at Stormont, and one would guess that it possibly wasn't at the top of the list for the Secretary of State.
No, the lack of an executive at Stormont has created a slowing down of the process. But a lot of work has been done. Organisations like our social enterprise NI have put together political support for this. So there's cross-party support at all level for this. The problem has been the system realising this is a very valuable thing to do. They're not obstructive because they're obstructive. They don't fully understand the potential impact, but we understand that it will grow the economy. It will create that more plural economy as we build these supply chains that we all can impact in. And when we earn resources, we invest that in the people we're working with, as to my two colleagues here.
I would agree with that, Wendy. One of the things that I'm finding is the sector that's maybe taken up the opportunity quicker is the private sector rather than the public sector. And the conversation, if you think of Now Group, one of the businesses we have is Love Catering. And we have found great opportunities with private sector companies who, for instance, buy sandwiches. And why would they not buy from a social enterprise? So the conversations that I have tend to be, oh my goodness, this is a great opportunity. We'd love to get involved. We just didn't know. And interviews like this help with this. And we collectively, I think Bill, John and I and all of the members of Social Enterprise need to start shouting about how good and the real impact. And we need to raise awareness because it's about it being good business for everybody.
But then you also hear, Jenny, and I'm sure you do at functions and so on, you also hear on another side from businesses who aren't social enterprises who are saying, well, you know, why should you guys be taking business away from me when I'm just trying to make a decent profit, you know, have an extra holiday, employ people, whatever. And, you know, they think it's an uneven playing field, don't they?
They do. And, you know, that was very pronounced whenever there was the recent debate about rates and charity shops and the competition on the high street as part of the review of non-domestic rates earlier. It was, I think, in the middle of last year. But I think, you know, I think a lot of private sector businesses, and I can certainly speak for ours, want to work with social enterprises. Mm. We will actually, as part of our own corporate social responsibility, we go out of our way to outsource things to social enterprises. We work with Bryson, we work with Maeve's organisation, we use Loaf Catering, we use other charities if we're going to, or social enterprises, if we're going to host a seminar, we'll try and place it there rather than a big hotel. You know, we also support some of the products that have been outlined earlier by Madlog. So we very much want to engage with that. I think it's also worth mentioning too in the housing sector, where they're maybe a little bit ahead in terms of there being a social clause included in the tendering for new builds of units. So there has to be that inclusion and connection with society. And I think people want to engage in that way.
That's Jenny Ebbett. You've been hearing from there. She's a partner specialising in charity law at Edwards and Company Solicitors. You're listening to Inside Business. I'm Wendy Austin. We're talking about social enterprise. Bill Atkinson, Chief Executive of Ucells, with me, as is John McMullen of Bryson Group, and Maeve Monaghan, who's CEO of the Now Group. John, you wanted to come in on the points that Jenny was making there.
Yeah, yes. Actually, the issue of social clause is an interesting one, because we all have asked for them. They seem very sensible. The problem is our system doesn't give you a score for them when we compete. So, in fact, if there's a disadvantage in competing, actually the disadvantage is more with us than it may well be with the private sector, because we don't get any score for the things that we're really good at, which is creating, developing social impact. That's why the idea of having an act which puts a duty on the, there's a power there to do this. It can be put in place at any time, but the power doesn't have to be enacted until there's a duty. So the idea of the Act is to create a duty to assure, and particularly in public procurement, that this is a scored element within the assessment. That is a game changer for us and a game changer for Northern Ireland. And it will create opportunity for the private sector in those mixed supply chains. This is a win-win-win, I think.
Mm-hmm. Phil?
I agree with John fully. I don't think it's social enterprise or the private sector. I think it's both. Mm-hmm. I think if we can learn to work more collaboratively, we all win. Because I think from the point of view, when you look at the private sector, social enterprise will bring that overall social impact. We have a a long history of how we clearly demonstrate that we're adding social value around job creation and sustainable job creation. And I think that's the bit we need to get across. Whilst at times competition's good, it doesn't always need to be either or. It can be as well as.
What about councils? I think a couple of you have mentioned the local council situation. And I was thinking when I was listening to Jim talking about the zero waste situation and different containers for different kinds of waste. And you, John, were talking about selling different kinds of plastic. I mean, Inside Business went to see your recycling operation a few months ago. Yeah. And one of the things that I brought home with me afterwards was what I'd been told, which was that you can, that if you keep your paper separate and your plastic separate, then they're worth considerably more than if you chuck them all into the one bin. But I only have the one bin for those things, and lots of people are in that situation, and that's a council thing. So I'm sorry, that's a very long and rambling question.
No, but it's very valid.
It's a bit unjoined up, isn't it?
It's absolutely unjoined up, and it needs a steer from government. And without an executive in place, it's hard to give that steer. But clearly, the focus is: are we recycling? Or are we collecting waste? We are recycling. Therefore, the way you think about it is different. And you're absolutely right, Wendy. You've clearly got the message. If we protect the integrity of the material, it is more valuable. Therefore, it can go into remanufacture. The really special thing about that is that we can remanufacture in Northern Ireland. So we can add value to the products we sell in Northern Ireland. We can create jobs in Northern Ireland. That's the circular nature of a circular economy. And we can do that at scale. I mean, I think we're recovering about 64,000 tonnes of material. Anything we can collect through our box system, the wheelie box, and the technical term is source separation. That's pristine material that can be sold at high value and it can go to local markets. When materials are contaminated and mixed, it costs a lot of money to try and clean them up. You don't get them clean to the same level of quality tolerance, therefore they go into secondary markets and they export off the island.
It's a whole new way of thinking, really, isn't it? As I think we mentioned before, it's not just something that you're all going to have to do. It's something that we're all going to have to start thinking differently about. There doesn't seem to be that much education going on about it at the moment, Bill. Is that frustrating from your point of view?
Well, I suppose from the point of view of as we continue to increase awareness of the impact of social enterprise, once people become aware, they can't become unaware. So opportunities like this help us get the message out. And I think from the point of view of if you look at that continual focus on, I suppose, the reducing size of the public purse, we are going to have to consider things that we've never considered before, and we are going to have to do things that we've never thought we would ever do.
I suppose, though, Jenny, there may be some charities who would listen to what Bill's saying there about thinking about doing things that we've never done and think, well, maybe social enterprise is the route that I should take. You know, there's a train wreck of cuts coming down the track. That's something that we could do, but it's not for everybody, is it?
No, it's not. And it is very important to get proper help and advice in setting up a social enterprise and to really understand what it is you're setting up. And there are lots of helper groups out there and organisations that can do that. I was thinking of Social Enterprise ANI, for example, which is a charity itself, but also organises programmes and training and education to help people start up businesses. There's also support from Invest and other organisations that help people with a start-up business. But it is getting the core understanding of what the model is really about. You know, we would help people as well, but often they don't really, you know, you need a solicitor at some point down the line if you're taking a lease or employing people, or we can advise on setups as well. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a barrier to entry. There are lots of other people that can help you do that and do it in the right way. I think that one of the things about, I'm helping a charity at the moment which has quite a sophisticated group structure, but they're actually looking at innovation and different lines of social enterprise because what they started doing is now running out of steam. But that's the beauty of social enterprise, is that flexibility to change it and alter it and go where the markets are and identify new opportunities. So I think that's really a key thing about not only social enterprise, absolutely, but the charity sector, is that flexibility and innovation.
It's interesting that, you know, that we're talking to three groups here, basically, and you've all tried different things at different times. I'm guessing that some of them have worked, some of them haven't, some of them have been fantastic. And when you look at that whole aspect of it, you still need to keep moving it forward, yeah. Maeve, don't you?
Yeah.
And I mean, I looked at the tender and grant alert page on the Social Enterprise NI website. I'm so impressed at my own research. But there were no tenders on it. Now, mm-hmm. is that down to political inactivity? I mean, is this a real concern?
No, there are tenders out there at the moment. They're maybe just not on their website. Yeah. We'll be looking at the tendering website that everybody else is looking for. And I think that's the difference around this. You know, we're doing business with other businesses. I just wanted to go back slightly on Jenny's point and your question, Wendy, around charities and social enterprises, because I think it's really important for people to understand that social enterprise is a great thing to be involved in. And it's a really, really good model, but it's not for every charity. And we have to be really aware that there are really, really small, really great charities that are doing fantastic work. But they will always need funding support for that because of the nature of the work they do. A business model is not right for everybody. But when it is, it has to be able to innovate and move on, just like any other business. You need your product needs to be innovative and you need to align it with your market.
What are the best things that you've done as far
everything
as
making
it work?
So in relation to social enterprise business, I would say the one I'm most proud of is the development and growth of Loaf. So Now Group itself does fantastic work and I wouldn't take away from that at all. But what we've done is take an industry that is not easy to make money in, and it's a really hard slog in catering. And put a lot of time and effort into creating a really good quality brand with a fantastic team that's competing against others and in that high end area. Because one of the challenges you have is people assume, I think still, if you're a social enterprise, it's really good what you do, but it's not going to be as good a product. And I'm absolutely adamant that we will be better. And it won't be that it's cheaper. It'll be the same price. You might actually have to pay a little bit more because of the quality of it. But Loaf and the cafes and I suppose our corporate catering brand is something that makes me smile every time I think about it.
And you're aiming for quality as well, I suppose. I mean, you all are. You know, none of you wants to produce something that isn't up to scratch. And that's exactly what you've managed to do, Bill.
I guess the big focus for us, if we look at our bed manufacturing, we've seen our bed manufacturing treble in the last 2 years, and we are competing commercially with large manufacturers in Northern Ireland and in the UK. We're competing successfully. It's a freestanding business. As I say, we have all the pressures around cost, the right people, materials. And I guess given the fact that we are supporting people with health conditions and disabilities, the fact that we are able to compete now, not only in the UK, on a UK level, but also what we've seen with the Green Apple Award, I think it's fantastic. But it's for me, it's all about the people.
Yeah. Just tell us, I didn't get a chance really to ask you about the Green Apple Award, but that was a cracker for you, wasn't it?
An amazing result. We were lucky enough to be awarded the Ireland Green Apple Award in 2016, and at that point, I wasn't aware that all the national winners then went forward to a global competition, and we were quite surprised when we found out in November of last year that we'd been shortlisted, and then in December we got an award. So it was a fantastic result for us.
It obviously makes all of you feel good about what you do. I mean, you're quite collegiate and mm-hmm. you all work together in various ways too. Is that an important part of it all, as far as you're concerned, John?
I think it's absolutely an important part of it all. One of the things that we have been doing collectively, and certainly something that we've driven, is putting social enterprise on the agenda. People now get to understand it. Also proving that it can be not just a quality provider, but it can scale up. I mean, we're employing probably just below 800 people at the moment. And we like a number of other social enterprises, now appear in the top 200 SMEs in Northern Ireland. So that scale bit opens the door and encourages people through, and using our own supply chains to help each other is part of our process.
And your people must be all important.
You're only as good as the people you have and the degree to which you invest in their development. Mm. That's where success comes from.
Look, it's been absolutely fascinating hearing from all of you. Social enterprise, it's a circular economy that we're all heading for, and it's been terrific to hear about the contribution that all of you are making to it. But that's about it, I'm afraid, for Inside Business for this week. My thanks to Bill Atkinson, to John McMullen, to Maeve Monaghan, to Jenny Ebbage, and to Jim Keyes. The programme was produced by Elaine Dunseith. I'm Wendy Austin. You can stay in touch, give us your ideas, on Twitter at WendyTalksBiz. With two Z's. Next week, the scary and brave new world of automation. That's all to come. Inside Business, Sundays at 1:30, Mondays at 6:30, and a podcast whenever it suits you. So don't miss it. That was the Inside Business podcast. I'm Wendy Austin. Stay in touch with the programme. You can email us at insidebusiness@bbc.co.uk or get in touch on Twitter. Follow us at Wendy Talks Biz. Remember to join us again next week, 1:30 on Sunday, 6:30 p.m. on Monday.